This is Community Transformed with Father Thomas Dubé.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Father Thomas Dubé, Marist. You may recall that last week we were dealing with the third main area of our series, namely Community Transformed, as being a place where we show warmth and a caring concern toward other people, especially those with whom we're living immediately, the primary community, as sociologists would put it, and do put it. Now, you recall, perhaps, that we spent a fair bit of time just taking a look at the Lord. While he was a strong character, fearless, yet he was tender toward other people and showed warmth. And we took a good number of texts where it's obvious that he's showing this remarkable concern and warmth toward other people. And we had begun to take a look at St. Paul. And I should like to continue with Paul, and then we will go on with just a couple other New Testament saints and characters. People, by character. Nothing pejorative. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul takes up somebody who is very much a problem in Corinth, has done something very bad, doesn't say in the letter what it was, but somebody who is a real disturbance in that community. And in chapter 4, he brings up what to do about that particular situation. Let me see if I find it here. I think I made a mistake in my notation because, yes, it is chapter 2, and it begins at verse 4. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, I made the mistake again. In chapter 2, verse 4, St. Paul begins to discuss what to do about this problem maker, grave problem. And here is what he says. And I should like you to notice how touchingly he opens his heart about that situation. I quote, "When I wrote to you in deep distress and anguish of mind and in tears, it was not to make you feel hurt, but to let you know how much love I have for you." Paul just quite completely opens his heart to the Corinthians. And so much like the Lord at the tomb of Lazarus, you may recall last week, he's deeply distressed and anguish of mind. And he openly admits it and says it. He's not bashful at all. He's showing how warmly and deeply he loves the Corinthians and says so. "And I'm in tears as I write. Virile Paul, weeping. It was not to make you feel hurt, but to let you know how much love I have for you." Once again, if we lived like that in our communities, whatever ones they may be, they would be transformed, quite clearly. There'd be some other things that would have to be there too, of course, but it would just change the thing almost completely. Then he goes on and describes somebody's been the cause of pain, and I don't want to overstate it, you see. And then he gives them advice, what to do with the culprit. "The punishment already imposed by the majority on the man in question is enough." In other words, no more punishment. You've given enough to this man, you see. "And the best thing now is to give him your forgiveness and encouragement, or he might break down from so much misery." Notice how considerate he is in showing that warmth toward that culprit. Just like the father, the prodigal son, notice, you see. "So I am asking you to give him some definite proof of your love for him." That is shown warmth. It is magnificent, as you will readily agree. Now, there's one more spot in St. Paul that I want to share with you. I mean, one more we will take. There are others, I'm quite sure. If you start around, you'll find them. In 2 Corinthians, chapter 13, at the very end of it, the conclusion, he wishes them happiness, and he be united, live in peace, and so on. And then he says in verse 12, greet one another with a holy kiss. Now that idea, by the way, of the holy kiss occurs 5 times in the New Testament. It is surely shown warmth. Notice it is a holy kiss. That's clear enough. And it's very beautiful, showing a warmth. So that we are to be living with one another, not that you walk down on Fifth Street in New York City and go kiss a stranger. No, that wouldn't work in our society. But these are brothers and sisters. These are people who really love one another. And we greet one another with a holy kiss. 5 times in the New Testament. Now, I have found out in reading a goodly number of lives of saints, married saints, like Thomas More or Elizabeth Seton, and so on, surely bishop saints, priest saints, and religious brother saints, I have found out that every saint I know of, except maybe Jerome, he could be a little salty, but even he's not an exception, because if you read Jerome's letters, he is very affectionate in them. So I have found out, in all the saints I've read, that they are also men and women who show a great deal of warmth toward others. I think of St. Teresa. We have about 400 of her letters. And frequently in her letters, she just plainly says how much I love you and how much I miss you, and very affectionate with people. And she openly speaks of it. And of course, it is a holiest affection. Nothing the least bit amiss about it, but it is shown warmth. I think of Therese of Lisieux. Her letters will probably surprise you sometimes at how warm they are and affectionate. If you should have any doubt about that, read her letters. There's a new edition of them. They are well edited, too. And they are all of them like the Lord and St. Paul. Now, let me close this little section on shown warmth. That is, close it in the sense that our illustrations we'll have to draw to an end. In the first letter of Peter, chapter 3, verses 8 and 9, we read the following. Finally, says Peter, you should all agree among yourselves. That's shared vision, notice, once again. And be sympathetic. That's what we had a little while, I think it was last week someplace in Romans. Rejoice with those who rejoice and be sad with those in sorrow. Be sympathetic with people and show it. Love the brothers and the sisters. Have compassion and be self-effacing. Never pay back one wrong with another. We had that a few weeks ago. The way we don't do things in gospel community, we don't return evil for evil, it's with good. You remember that. And St. Peter is here saying the same kind of thing. We never pay back evil for evil. Never a sharp word in answer to a sharp word. Always something gentle and healing. Have no angry word toward another. Instead, pay back with a blessing. Exactly what the Lord says in the Sermon on the Mount. Show how much you love other people in your manner and in what you do and how you handle problems. That little text, by the way, in Peter here, recaps so much, as you will notice, of our whole series in just about 3 or 4 lines. Our last example of shown warmth comes from the second letter of John. There's only one chapter in that letter. And the verse we're after is verse 6. And here is what we read. To love is to live according to his commandments. By the way, it is well for us to realize that every commandment simply spells out what love requires in these circumstances. God does not issue arbitrary precepts. Here's something you don't do, and here's something you do, and I just want to keep you on your watching what you're doing and get you to be attentive. Oh no, God doesn't do anything just to keep us attentive. He's got a reason for every single precept. So to love is to live according to his commandments. this is the commandment which you have heard since the beginning, to live a life of love. Six words. The commandment is to live a life of love, so that everything we do should be spelling out what love means in certain circumstances. And a person who really loves another will do what is pleasing to the beloved, as long as it's a good thing to do, you see. Now that, of course, is a beautiful statement of what we're talking about here, shown warmth. That whatever we happen to do in our state in life, or meeting other people in the supermarket checkout line, as well as a lot of other places, waiting in a doctor's office, visiting somebody in the hospital, we are always to be living a life of love. And that will include, of course, what we're dealing with immediately at the moment, shown warmth. We are not just officials getting a job done. It's to be done in a gospel way. Now, that brings us to the second aspect of this part of our series. We're calling it, you remember, caring concern. And I should like, first of all, to say what caring means. I think we all know what it means in ordinary language in our society. But I want to talk about gospel caring, because once again, it is way beyond merely what goodness we can attain in our human manner. We are to live also in a divine manner. So there are two ways in which I want to express this in biblical terms. The first way, and I'll give you the biblical basis in just a moment, the first way to say what caring means is, as it were, to jump into the skin of another person, perceive reality from that person's point of view, and to react as though you were in that person's skin. How would you want to be treated? So caring is like seeing reality and reacting to it as though you were within another person. Now, let me give you biblical basis for saying that. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, which is a chapter that deals with the mystical body, which is the church, says, as Paul says, in chapter 12, we come to verses 25 and 26. Says Paul, so that there may not be disagreements within the body. Notice once again, he is telling us about shared vision. There may not be disagreements inside the body, but that each part may be equally concerned for all the others. So each one of us is a part of the mystical body. So I'm concerned about you, if I really love you, and if I'm living the gospel. I'm concerned about you in the sense that I want to look to your advantage, not what I can get out of you, or how can I overcome you, or how can I beat you to something, you see, we both want. Oh no, that's not it. I view reality to your advantage, not only to mine. So that, he goes on, Paul does, if one part is hurt, all parts are hurt with it. So if you are hurt, I am hurting in and with you. If one part is given special honor, all parts enjoy it. So if you succeed and you're honored and I'm left in the shade, well and good, great, because I'm looking at reality from your point of view as well as mine. Even I prefer your point of view. And that is real caring in the gospel sense. You can see how sublime it is. And this is the way, of course, the way saints live. Okay. Now, the second way I want to understand and explain what caring means for the gospel, because it is more than our common human meaning, though it would include all the goodness there. To get a feel for gospel caring, I would like to substitute the word caring for the word love. In John's Gospel, chapter 13, verses 34 and 35. And we will get a feel for this by listening to the words of the Lord and just changing the one word for the other. I give you a new commandment. Love one another. So let's, instead of reading love there, because caring and loving are very, very close indeed, a new commandment I give you. Care for one another. Just as I have cared for you, you also must care for one another. Now, the Lord cared for you and me to the point, and we had done nothing for him up to that point except sin. That's what we've done of ourselves alone. That's all we can do by ourselves. All we did was to offend him, and he cared for you and me to the point of dying on the cross, tortured to death. And that is the way I'm supposed to care for other people. And he makes that explicit point, just as I have cared for you, you must care for one another, even to the point of death. This reminds me of St. Maximilian Kolbe. Remember how he gave his life in the Nazi prison? They had chosen him, St. Maximilian, to be executed. They chose another man, a husband and a father, to be executed. And Maximilian volunteered to take that man's place. I guess there was just a kind of quota of people who were being executed in that starvation bunker. And Maximilian came up and he offered himself in place of the married man with children. And he explained, you have a wife and you have children, I shall give myself in place of you. That is really caring. That's exactly what the Lord is saying about. And the saints are the ones, of course, who live the gospel heroically well. If they didn't, they wouldn't be canonized. Just as I have cared for you, you must care for one another. By this love, by this caring you have for one another, everyone will know that you are my disciples. So we are to care for one another to the point of it being a miracle. Because that's what the Lord says. It's a sign that the Lord has appeared in the flesh, that people would love one another that much and care for one another that much. It's a sign that the incarnation has taken place. You will find it nowhere else in the world except in the Lord's little flock and those who live the message as it ought to be lived. Let me tell you three little incidents, or I've met this sort of thing on the road at least once or twice, and sometimes more times than once. And I want to illustrate caring, shown warmth, in a today kind of manner. Not that today is better than the gospel day, but it does illustrate the gospel. Let me give you a few examples. I have noticed that people can be showing other people around. It could be a school, it could be a plant, it could be a hospital. I want to take not a business, because I want to talk about one of our Christian, gospel, Catholic communities, you see, and I want to illustrate the point. I have noticed, I was once taken, to be specific, on a tour of a hospital, and the nurse who was showing me through brought me in from the ground level. That's where I was to meet her. And so we went down that corridor, meeting, as I recall, an outpatient clinic, and a lot of frightened people, poor people who had come in for treatment, and you could see when they look at you, you know, you're dressed up in a suit and all that sort of thing, and there's a nurse there, and they're afraid, kind of, they have that fearful look on their face. Well, anyhow, so we went down that corridor, up an elevator, down another corridor, another part of the hospital, and we went, I suppose it was a good half hour, and constantly passing people. I mean, frequently. I suppose we passed an intern or two at least, several nurses, a few visitors. I remember one patient was out in the corridor with pajamas and a bathrobe on, taking a little bit of exercise, I suppose. And we passed all these people, and I noticed that this nurse didn't greet anybody, didn't smile at anyone, didn't even nod as far as I could tell. Not that I was watching especially, but it just struck me. It would seem to me in one of our own institutions, we would be warm toward people, and we would show the warmth, at least with a nod or a smile. That's not the way we do things, or should do things, according to the gospel. Now, I'm well aware that You can't, if it's a big crowd of people, you can't nod at everybody or smile. You could maybe smile at everybody, but at least we can do better than that. Showing warmth, showing concern. Let me tell you another example. It was even a little bit funny, but I was giving this retreat somewhere, and it was a warm climate, I recall. Not real hot, but warm. And I remember the wind blowing in the French windows of the place. And during one of the conferences, a bell went off, an electric bell. And it was a very annoying bell, as indeed it should have been, because it was an elevator bell, emergency. It was electric, and it was a kind of got on your nerves, and loud. And so it was so loud that I don't think the people could hear me when I was talking. So I just stopped talking while the bell went on, and it went on. Maybe it was no more than 30 seconds, but it seemed like a long time. And so one person got up, one retreatant got up and went off, apparently to check what's going on and correct it. And the bell continued. And after a little while longer, still the bell was ringing, annoying us. And another person, retreatant, got up and went off. And then the bell stopped. And I continued the conference and we finished it. Now, I found out later that what had happened was that somebody got stuck in the elevator between floors and couldn't get out, and so properly rang the bell, the alarm bell, the emergency bell, which is what that individual should have done. Okay. What had happened with the two people who left the conference, one of them went to that elevator and told the passenger where to get off in no uncertain terms, angry. Now, of course, literally, the passenger couldn't get off. That was a problem. But you know what I mean by that expression. Now, the second person also went to the elevator and brought a box of candy and a magazine and gave it to the person in the elevator to keep that person happy and amused and kind of delighted in a way until the repairman came and got that individual out. Now, notice, both left the conference with a good intention to correct what was amiss. But the manner was not loving in the first case, and it was very loving in the second. Caring concern. Looking at that person's plight from within the person, showing a warmth, a concern. The other person just wanted to get the problem corrected and was not warm in manner. And so you notice that showing love is not only a question of hugging and kissing. There's a place for that in appropriate circumstances and the rest and times. But that's not the whole story. It's all the nitty-gritty of daily life. In gospel community, we show love for other people. Now, that brings us then to the last little area in this major section on showing warmth and concern. I want to add now just a few words about trusting. In the gospel sense of the term, we all know what trust is. I want to suggest a particular meaning of it for our purposes here, which is a meaning in our use of English today. By trusting, I mean we suppose goodness in people. When they act, we suppose a good motivation, a worthy motivation. We don't suspect people unless there's good reason to suspect. And we don't attribute a bad motive to people unless there is reason to impute it. For example, if somebody proves over and over again that he is a liar, not simply he makes mistaken judgments and revises them later, that's not a lie, that's a change of mind. Not simply somebody makes a mistake, it's really a lie, and this person does it habitually. I think that person has lost the right to be trusted in speech. Now, however, so trusting means that we suppose goodness. So that if, for example, during a retreat where we're supposed to be quiet, somebody's talking, we suppose they've got a good reason for talking. We don't suppose that they're breaking the rule of the retreat just because they don't care for it, you see. Or if they don't do something else they're supposed to do, like be at morning prayer in the retreat, we don't suppose there's some bad reason we suppose, a good reason for it. And therefore, we trust in gospel community. And we suppose that people are good in doing whatever it is that they're doing, even when on a superficial look at it, it might look as though they're doing something wrong. We want to be trusted, and we want others to trust us. We'll stop at that point and then take up next week right here.
You have been listening to Community Transformed with Father Thomas Dubé on EWTN Global Catholic Radio.